Good morning and welcome to Storylines. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Our guest today is author and poet Bruce Meyer. Bruce, welcome to Storylines.
Delighted to be talking to you this morning. Yeah.
Bruce, when I was thinking about how I'd introduce you this morning, I thought, okay, I'm just going to keep it simple because you have worn so many hats over the progress of your career. I couldn't even list them all with the time we've got available. So today we're going to concentrate on the career you had as a photojournalist in the 1980s, because that is has resulted in this beautiful new book, Portraits of Canadian Writers, published once again by the inimitable The Porcupine's Quill in Erin Village. And so you've produced this book, but the story about how the book emerged is so fascinating. Just tell us a little bit about how it was rescued from some long-forgotten files.
Well, my daughter was helping me clean my study. I have a study in the basement of my house. It's got 24,000 books in it, and that's where I do all my work.
Hang on.
She was helping me clean out some files and go through things. And we ran across this filing cabinet full of, you know, contact sheets and negatives, and she started looking at them, and she says, "Who took these?" And I said, "Well, I did." And she says, "Why? They're all arranged in files." And I said, "Oh, yeah, my mom, when I was away from living away, I guess I was in London or whatever, she sat down, she decided to label them all and sort them all." And she says, "You know, you should do something with these." So at that point, it was 2014, and I was up in Erin, Ontario, talking to Tim Inkster and Elke Inkster about a book I did called The Seasons, which was a book of 100 sonnets. And they said, "What, you know, anything else new?" And I said, "Well, I've got, my daughter found all these photographs," and I showed them a binder of, you know, 5x7s. And they said, "These are gorgeous. Let's do a book." So that's how the whole thing sort of emerged as a volume. They had been taken over a period of, I guess, from about 1979, off and on through to the 90s, as part of photojournalism, and journalistic mm-hmm. activities of mine when I interviewed Canadian authors. So they were just sort of an afterthought, but I was able to photograph the authors in their own places,
yeah.
in their own homes, and in their own environments.
And the book actually shows us these candid photographs of people like, Leonard Cohen, Al Purdy, Irving Layton, Margaret Atwood, Dorothy Livesey. You know, the list is a long list, and each page gives us a narrative from your personal viewpoint and experience. Some of them are actually quite entertaining. I loved your story of P.K. Page. And so we really feel we get to know you through the insights you've shared with us.
It's a memoir, in a way.
Yeah.
This is what a couple of the reviewers commented on, that it's not just a book of portrait photographs. When I was taking the photographs, you know, I was in conversation with these writers and published a lot of the interviews. When I was over in England in the early 80s, I spent a lot of time studying, you know, the portraiture at the National Portrait Gallery in London, and just going in my spare time between research and just looking at the way portraits are arranged. One of my favorite artists is Hans Holbein. And I think that the photograph should be, take on the shape of an icon, that it should tell you a lot about the sitter.
Yeah.
It should read as an extra text in a kind of a visual way, so that you have the sense of who these people are and what they're all about, just simply by looking at the photograph. And then it's interesting that the photographs were taken of the authors, but they were portraits of the authors' works as well.
And you've said that these iconic Canadian personalities, they were aware, and I'm going to quote you, they were aware that they were that they had a vision of how a nation can dream, and they were aware that they were speaking that dream.
I don't think at the time they realized that they're as important, that they were as important then as they are now.
Okay.
It's a strange thing. I mean, with a few exceptions, such as Irving Layton, for example, there was I think there was just the sense that they were writing, and they were writing out of a love of it, but I don't think they realized exactly what they were creating.
Mm.
And in retrospect, I feel very fortunate to un all these people, because this was a major moment in Cannes Lit, the people that are now bronze statues, such as, Leighton or Purdy or mm. Fry or McEwen, were simply trying to just write about what interested them, what they felt passionate about. And I think that's what came through when I talked to them, that there was this tremendous passion. Sadly, some of the authors have not been they've been forgotten in many ways.
Yeah.
And I felt that the book was a kind of a way of pointing to a number of them and saying, hey, look, remember these guys, because these guys are important at the time.
Yes.
Just Gustafsson and Mandel, and they really deserve to be recognized for the importance and the beauty and power of what they had to say.
And many of them were very young at the time. We've got Catherine Graham, who was our guest a few weeks ago. We've got Michael Morola, who has gone on to found a publishing house as well as continue writing. We'll have him as our guest in October. So you also have a mix of those who were older at the time, and they've either passed on or they're very mature now. But you had up and comers that were similar in age to you at the time.
Well, some of them were such as Richard Green and Catherine Graham and Kateri Lanthea, Luciano Iacobelli, who I got to know in the intervening years. They were people that I brought up to Barry in the last 5 years. And after my daughter found the files and said, you really should take this up again, I started photographing the authors that I brought to Barry as part of a reading series that I helped to found. And the reading series is still going great guns. I'm not involved with it anymore, but I show up as a private citizen. And but they were people that I'd gotten to know, and people whose voices are very distinct and who are great writers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look at their work and I think, someone should photograph them. But there's also those that I missed. Margaret Lawrence wrote me in a very kind letter about very early chapbook of mine, and she invited me to come to Lakefield, and a group of us went to Lakefield one day, drove up there, Richard Harrison and Robert Lawrence, and she wasn't there.
Oh.
And it was kind of sad that we'd missed her. Morley Callahan was another one who I would have liked to have photographed. Kildare Dobbs, I met him umpteen times when he used to come through the School of Continuing Studies, where I was an administrator for 6 years. But I never thought of photographing them. Don Coles is another one. So, I always regret the ones who got away.
Of course.
Because, I knew them, and I thought, I wrote about them, and I talked to them, got to know them, read their books. But I never thought of raising the camera. And for a long time, I got away from it. And so there was a sense of coming back in the last several years and just trying to record people I know, younger writers. So.
Right. Now, Bruce, we're just going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. But when we come back, I'd like to ask you to share with us, for those listeners who are also pursuing writing as either as a career or as something they've just always wanted to do, your advice has been that what you did yourself, which was to seek out other writers rather than working in a vacuum. So when we come back, I'd like to hear more from you about some of this excellent advice. And I'm going to even say that some of the excellent advice that I got from you in our last conversation is now pinned up right in front of my computer screen. And so we're going to talk a bit more about that when we come back. We're speaking with Bruce Meyer this morning on Storylines. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Storylines. This is Christine Cowley. Today, we're so fortunate to have with us author, poet, Bruce Meyer, talking about his latest book, Portraits of Canadian Writers. And Bruce, before the break, I mentioned that one of the things I took away in reading Portraits is that number one, you've done an incredible amount of living. You and I are the same age, and you have sat with and very often enjoyed very close relationships with writers who have defined Canadian literature over the past 50 years or more. And I see this book as a window on Canadian literature. And it came about because of your personal commitment to what you call immersing oneself in a literary milieu, which is something you believe is essential for writers who want to pursue a career and to stand out, you know, in their own field, or just to learn and absorb as much as they possibly can from those who have already made a mark. So having conversations about the art of writing, you've said, is part of becoming fully engaged. So tell us why you believe this is so essential.
Well, I think that when you meet other writers, A, you're getting out of your own little sort of, you know, paper bag. A lot of writers write with paper bags over their heads, and they shouldn't. B, they're not interested in the idea that writing is a conversation. The great writers, or the writers who are successful, know that their work is a conversation. I mean, there's been conversational books. Patrick Lane and Lorna Crozier were their first book together. Called No Longer Two People was a back and forth. Writers love to talk about their work. They love to share their understanding of things. You can take a creative writing course, and that's fine. But at a certain point, if the person teaching the creative writing course isn't a writer, there's a disconnect. The other thing is writers... I mean, Milton Acorn, for example, I would pick him up at the Waverly Hotel and we'd go to the Free Times Cafe, and he would read my poems out loud and he would bang his fist on the table and say, Mr. Meyer, you can't do that because of this. And he'd show me, you know, how to do things. So, you know, Barry Callahan was a mentor to me. And, you know, Gwendolyn McEwen, I think, was the greatest of them all. I mean, I knew Timothy Findlay was helpful and Dorothy Lives was helpful because they wanted to talk about the technology of words. And not, I won't use the word craft because that's kind of that kind of cheapens the whole art of writing. But the idea of the technology of words and what you could do with them. But McEwen used to stop me on her bicycle. She used to ride around the annex on a little tiny bike, almost like a clown bicycle. And she'd say, come on in for tea. So I'd go in for tea, and we'd sit there by the hour. And we would talk about everything from T.E. Lawrence, for example, because she was working on the T.E. Lawrence poems at that point, to her relationship with Milton Acorn, and just the whole business of being a young writer. Because none of these writers, or with very few exceptions, had any sort of creative writing classes. Now, McEwen, unbeknownst to me, got my first book of poems. It had been rejected by about 1,000 presses. The American Pulitzer Prize winner, Richard Howard, I'd sent my work to him through Jeffrey Donaldson, who's also in the book. And Richard wrote back to me and says, well, you know, how should, and I said, had said to him, how should I write? And he says, well, there's no right way or wrong way. There's only your way. But he says, try taking your poems apart and putting them back together again using meter, rhyme, and form. And as he was saying that to me, he was saying it to a lot of American poets as well, who emerged a few years later as the American New Formalists, people like Brad Lighthizer and Mary Jo Salter. I met Molly Peacock, Dana Gioia, the people who shaped American poetry in you know, the last decade of the 20th century and the first decade of the 21st century. Well, I still got rejected, and that even got more ire because they were rhyming and things, and there were sestinas and villanelles in the book. Well, unbeknownst to me, James Deal, who's also in the Portraits book, took my manuscript because we reviewed each other's manuscripts when we were starting out. And he dropped it on the desk of Gwendolyn McEwen, who was the writer in residence at the University of Toronto, 1 year. And she phoned me up. It was the last Christmas, last Boxing Day that she was alive. And she said, I spent all of Christmas Day reading and rereading and rereading your manuscript. I think it's great. And I'm sending it to a publisher, which was Black Moss Press. And I didn't hear from Black Moss. And June came around, and I said to her, oh, I haven't heard yet. And she says, you will, you will. A week after she died in the autumn of that year, I got the acceptance letter from Black Moss.
Wow.
So my first book of poems is dedicated to Gwendolyn McEwen. And, I once asked, you know, Alfred Korn, an American poet, you know, after he'd helped me in a workshop I was in. I very rarely attend workshops. I think it's the only one I've ever attended at Westchester. And I said to him, so thank you very much for showing me all these things. What can I do for you? And he says, help the next one. And I think that there's a sense that writers should be teaching writers, because going right back to Dante in the opening cantos of the Inferno, writing is almost like a conversation. It's a parade of authors who are talking to each other. That literature is a tradition, and it's an ongoing conversation. And because of that, I was conscious in Portraits of Canadian Writers that what I was depicting was a milieu where all these people actually knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
Where they, you know, Milton Acorn one night would not come to James Deal's house because Dorothy Livesay was there, and he hung out in a fruit store on St. Clair, and he kept calling us from the fruit store. And eventually, when Livesay left, because he didn't like Livesay, a couple of friends and I had to go down and pick up about $200 worth of fruit that he had bought from this fruit stand and bring it back. And, you know, I said to him, would you buy all this stuff for? And he says, they were getting suspicious and I didn't want to walk up there. And I couldn't loiter on the sidewalk, you know, because I'd been stopped by police and everything like that. So anyways, there's a sense that there is definitely a milieu that the writers do talk to each other. And in the way that they talk to each other, it's not just between poems or between stories and things. There's a sense that writers talk to each other about the craft, and I think that's important if we're going to have a living continuum in Canadian literature.
Yes, and Bruce, we're got time for, you know, a couple of seconds to hear a response from you on one of the important things that you shared with me was your theory or belief that writing isn't just what comes out on a keyboard. It's what you're doing in your head all the time.
I don't spend an awful lot of time at the keyboard. I'm usually walking around doing something else. I work on whole ideas in my head so that the writing becomes a transcription.
Okay.
I think you have to open your eyes and look at the world. You have to engage the world. That if you sit down at a keyboard and say, okay, now I'm going to write, you're going to be gravely disappointed. If, however, while you were cooking dinner or, you know, washing the windows or vacuuming or something like that, and you're thinking about an idea and saying, what if, and you start visualizing it, the writing goes much, much smoother.
Bruce, where can we learn more about what you're doing and the enormous library of books you've written? What's your website, Bruce?
I don't have a website. I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
I have to pay my daughter at some point to set up a website for me. She's web savvy. I'm basically a technological idiot.
We can find out more about you, though, through the Porcupine's Quill Press.
Porcupine's Quill Press, Black Moss Press. Website. Exile Editions is currently working on a website, and I think they'll be posting reviews and so forth. And I am on Facebook, and if anybody wants to follow me, they're welcome to send me a friend request. My problem is that I'm terrible at promoting my work.
You don't have time.
You're sitting writing it, and I sort of wish someone would just do the other stuff for me. And I'm always happy when I get a successful publicist. And I've had a couple of really good publicists in the recent past who have done wonders. So,
Bruce, thank you so much for being with us today on Storylines. I really enjoyed the conversation. And hopefully we will continue this conversation, have you on here another time, because there are so many things we'd like to ask you. Thanks again, Bruce, for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Storylines on the Bay 88.7 FM. We're here every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. after the 10 o'clock news, talking to authors and book folks about books and the writing life. Please join us again.